So thank you, Jeanette, for reminding me about the West End, because I remember that. That was a horrible urban renewal situation. I'm pleased to be here to talk about something you are probably catching glimpses of as we migrate the federal government from a paper record-keeping environment to an online digital government. Talk about a little bit about the Open Government Initiative and how that affects the work of the National Archives, and talk about the challenges and opportunities ahead, because I think they have implications for everyone who deals with the records of an institution. So I'm going to start by providing a little bit of context about who we are and what we do for those of you who don't know all the nitty-gritty. The National Archives was created by Franklin Roosevelt. He signed the legislation in 1934, so it wasn't until the 30s that this country got serious about its records, and it was FDR who took a personal interest in records and ensured that he hired the right person to be the very first archivist of the United States, created the physical facility, and most importantly, discovered by wandering around the city where the records were and talked to the cabinet members about ceding control of those records to the federal, to a central source. And that was the most difficult part of his job. Finally, Franklin Roosevelt had to have a cabinet meeting devoted to record keeping where he laid down the law about this is the way we're going to conduct business. So the mission of the National Archives from the very beginning was to collect, protect, and encourage the use of the records of the government. And I love to use Franklin Roosevelt's quote when he was dedicating his presidential library in Hyde Park. He said, "It seems to me that the dedication of a library is in itself an act of faith. To bring together the records of the past and to house them in buildings where they will be preserved for the use of men and women in the future, a nation must believe in three things. It must believe in the past, it must believe in the future, and it must, above all, believe in the capacity of its own people so to learn from the past that they can gain in judgment in creating their own future." So from the very beginning, the intent has been to make the records available so that people can hold the government accountable and to learn from the past. As Bob Darton reminded us last night, an informed citizenry is the basis of democracy, you know, an often misquote attributed to Thomas Jefferson, although he never said it, but I love it, that information is the currency of democracy. So, starting in 1934, we are now in 46 facilities across the country, including 14 presidential libraries. It's a collection of about 13 billion pieces of paper, 43 million photographs, miles and miles of film and video, and billions of electronic records. We started collecting electronic mail during the Reagan administration. So between Reagan and Bush 41, 2.5 million email messages, 20 million from the Clinton White House, 210 million from the Bush 43 White House, and just over 300 million from the Obama White House. So that gives you some sense of the trajectory of electronic communication. It's a staff of about 3,000 people in those 46 facilities. The collection, the records start with the Oaths of Allegiance signed at Valley Forge by George Washington and his troops, and go all the way up to the tweets that are being created in the White House as I am speaking. The work of the National Archives is governed by two sets of laws, the Federal Records Act, which controls all of the records created in the 275 agencies and cabinet level and departments within the executive branch, and the Presidential Records Act, which covers everything that's created in the White House. So we're responsible for the executive branch. We provide courtesy stores all the records of Congress, and we also have the records of the Supreme Court. So all three branches of government are covered within the National Archives. We have, because we have the records, we also have certain other responsibilities that have grown up over time within the National Archives. The Information Security Oversight Office is responsible for overseeing all the classification activities within the executive branch. There are somewhere in the neighborhood of 2,500 classifiers. These are people within the executive branch who have the authority to mark something secret, top secret, or not. That's 2,500 people, and I would guess that that represents about 1,500 different classification guides. There is no standard, so one of the biggest problems within the federal government in terms of access to information and openness is the variety of classification systems that are in operation. A lot of attention being focused on that now. My staff has the responsibility of overseeing that and monitoring it and reporting it to both Congress and the White House. At the end of 2009, the President established the National Declassification Center within the National Archives, which has the responsibility of reviewing for declassification about 400 million pages of classified content going back to World War I. Unfortunately, it doesn't give me the authority to declass. It gives me the opportunity to convene the original classifiers to review their work for release. And I'm pleased to say that about 85% of what has been reviewed has been released. So we're on we've created a great process and culture, which is leading to more openness. The Office of Government Information Services within the National Archives is the FOIA ombudsman. Anyone in the American public who is having trouble getting their Freedom of Information Act request dealt with by a particular agency can deal with my staff, who will intercede on their behalf to determine the status of that request and move things along. And I think that's kind of who we are and what we do. So each new president comes in with a kind of philosophy mandate for how government is going to be improved and get better. And when President Obama took over, it was the Open Government Initiative was his big contribution, and it was to instill transparency, participation, and collaboration in the way government does its work. The timing was great for me because I was just becoming the Archivist of the United States as this was being rolled out. So I took this very seriously and tried to figure out how can the National Archives embody those principles also in terms of transparency, participation, and collaboration. So we were able to make the case that you can't have open government without good records management. And in fact, I said several times in public that the backbone of open government is good records management. So I was delighted to see the president issue a memorandum on managing government records, where he cited openness, that the backbone of open government is good records management. So we had from the President of the United States a memorandum on managing government records. Now, those of you who are involved in record keeping know that it's not the sexiest thing in the world. And to capture the attention of the President of the United States is pretty good, I think. And it's the first time since Truman, actually, that a White House has gotten involved in records management. So I am really pleased about that. So in making sure that we get this right. So he issued that memorandum in 2010. In 2011, I issued with the Office of Management and Budget a directive to all the agencies outlining what they needed to do to get ready for a shift from paper to electronic information, a series of steps to support them, the things that we were going to do and things that they had to do to get in shape for the shift. By the end of 2019, they needed to be creating all of their records electronically. 2019, the end of 2019. And that meant working with the industry, and we've had several industry days to educate the industry about what the issues were, what the needs are, and to help then create the tools that will make it easy for us to do this. One of the greatest problems is the level of human intervention in record keeping and determining what's record and what's not record. And we're working with the industry to create kind of artificial intelligence solutions to that so we can get the human out of record, out of electronic record keeping. When I first became the archivist, my electronic records management system was something called FileSurf. And when I created an email message, for instance, every time I hit send, I would get a pop-up that would ask me, is this a record? And I had to respond. And if I said yes, then I got another pop-up where I had to declare what kind of a record this is. And depending upon what kind of a record it is, I could get another pop-up. So guess what? Most people say, no, it's not a record. It's just human nature. It's easier to send that message if you have fewer hurdles to. So we can't have systems like that, and that's why we have to get the human decision-making out of the process and let machines do it. So another thing I discovered early on in my time at the National Archives is that in the wonderful family of job descriptions in the federal government, there's no such thing as a records manager, that the people in the agencies who were responsible for records management were often clerical staff who were doing this part-time. It wasn't their full-time job. High turnover in those positions, not a great deal of supervision, and not a great priority. As I said, record keeping isn't sexy, so there wasn't a great priority in on those positions and on that activity. So we were able to create, working with the Office of Personnel and Management, to create the family for the first time of records management positions within the federal government. More importantly, we were able to legislate the assignment of the naming of a senior agency official in each agency for record keeping. So a senior agency official for record keeping, not the records manager. This is at the assistant deputy secretary level in each of the agencies, an official who is responsible for overseeing records management. So that is now in place. We're marching towards the 2019 deadline, working with the agencies. And at this point, last report from the agencies, 85% of them are ready for the shift. They have been creating records electronically for a while. They're preparing for moving on now to the 2019 deadline. So the big news, with a new administration coming in, a requirement for reform of each of the agencies, and we have submitted to the Office of Management and Budget recommendations for the National Archives, and also a creation of a new strategic plan. And the biggest area of, I would say, controversy or interest from the agencies within the federal government in our new strategic plan is the statement that by the end of 2022, we will, to the fullest extent possible, no longer accept transfers of permanent or temporary records in analog formats and will accept records only in electronic format with appropriate metadata. So just so you understand what that means is agencies schedule records. So they're holding records in the agencies for periods of time. In some case, depending on the agency, it varies. So State Department's 30 years. So they've got 30 years worth of stuff sitting out there. So what we're telling them is either get that stuff into our custody by 2022 or digitize it and give it to me electronically. So those are the options, and that's some of the churn within the federal government going on right now. So let me tell you challenges and opportunities that all of this means for us. One of the biggest challenges is technology infrastructure within the federal government. We are currently, you taxpayers are supporting an annual budget of about $81 billion in the federal government for IT infrastructure. It is not very well coordinated. It is reminds me very much, having grown up in academia, it reminds me very much of the way it used to be, I think, in universities, with every faculty being going off and building their own system or buying their own system, and no enterprise, you know, approach to technology. There's a very much that's what I walked into in 2009. So there's a great deal of concern about replacement and just the adequacy of the technology infrastructure. And compounded with that is the fact that the relationship between the IT folks and the records management folks across the executive branch isn't the best. So IT folks are going off and building systems that have impact on records management without the consultation. When I first got there, the then CIO at the White House and I convened the very first meeting of all the IT folks and all the records managers in the executive branch. Hundreds of people in this big ballroom, and when we walked into the room, all the IT folks were over here, and all the records management folks over here, and we, the major contribution of that meeting was for the first time in lots of agencies, we got these two people together, you know, that didn't know each other. So getting people to work together and think about the impact of their work on each other has been incredibly important. So technology infrastructure is one of the biggest challenges. I talked about record keeping priority. While we have appointed those senior agency officials, and they have been appointed across the agencies, they are, many of them for the larger agencies are trapped in the slowdown of appointments for this administration. So we're waiting for the appointment of people who are going to fill those slots. So we're down in lots of areas on the senior agency official staff. Staffing is a huge problem. Staffing in both the agencies and in the National Archives in general, and part of this administration's plan to reduce the number of staff will have impact on both record keeping in the agencies and on us. I talked about National Declassification Center. Overclassification is a huge problem. You've read about this. It reminds me a little bit of the file surf scenario, where it's much easier to mark something top secret than to do the work that needs to be done to review it thoroughly to say it's not top secret at all. And the variety of classification systems means that the same document, and there's lots, I can point to lots of records where there are multiple equities, where several agencies involved in classification, and one has marked it top secret, and one has not classified it at all. So the lack of standardization is huge. We have a public declassification information board who's made a series of recommendations to the White House on this particular topic, and recommending one classification system for the entire government. So I've got my fingers crossed on that. And finally, in terms of challenges, a dramatic increase in the number of FOIA requests. Many of them are triggered by email problems that you've all read about in the press. To single out one agency, the State Department, I think their number of FOIA requests has quadrupled and continues to grow. But the number of FOIA requests and the lack of staff to process them in all the agencies. Every agency has a FOIA officer and a FOIA staff, but because of the volume, this is a major slowdown in processing. So those are some of the challenges we're dealing with. The opportunities, to end on a positive note. There is on the books a federal IT modernization report and set of goals, so I'm cautiously optimistic that we'll make some progress on that IT problem, and it's driven primarily by cybersecurity concerns and lack of enterprise approach, as I said. It includes network modernization and consolidation and shared services to enable future network architectures, cloud computing, collaboration tools. So this focus on shared services, I think, is going to be very positive for us. I think the promises of the directive are still a real opportunity for us, and I'm really pleased with the response from the agencies in terms of getting their acts together and the stuff that my staff has done to support them in this process. Another opportunity is the pressure that we get from the civil society. There are a group of folks like Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, Open the Government, the National Security Archive, Federation for American Scientists. I meet with those representatives six times a year to hear from them about the problems that they're having. And they have been great advocates for action on the part of access to information and openness. So they've really been very helpful. And finally, the public demand in general, that people, there's more and more interest in federal records, more and more demand for openness, which is good for us because it gives us, with the civil societies, with the general public, asking for more pressure on both Congress and the White House to open things up and be more transparent. So that's what I have to say.